This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Covering a lot of different topics of interest around the Umpqua Valley every day and in studio this afternoon, State Representative Christine Goodwin, thanks for coming in.
Oh, you're welcome, Kyle. Good afternoon.
So, a lot going on. I know summertime, a busy time for everybody, but wanted to kind of run through a lot of different things that have been going on. One of the things you've talked about before, and I want to cover it some more, we've talked about with a lot of different people about the need for affordable housing. And one of your points is that timber is needed for that. Bring that into the conversation.
Sure. So we need Oregon timber to build Oregon homes produced by Oregon labor. So one of the issue we're going to be pressing for legislation to, at the very least, a study, what kind of timber harvest, sustainable harvest, is going to be required to produce these 36,000 homes that the governor has stated we need, where we need to be to get ourselves up to speed. Because right now, Oregon is second in the nation in underproduction, ninth in the nation in price. So we've got a real problem with just, you know, affordable housing, the workforce housing, because we have a lower median income with interest rates, cost to develop properties. It's really, in fact, a cost to develop a property can be as much as $90,000. So when you couple low land supply and high development cost, that really shrinks the supply and drives the price up. But the reality is, if we're going to build these homes as the goal of our governor, then we need to have timber production. And we'd like to see that that come from Oregon and not be imported, or at least a percent of that from Oregon.
And how do you work with the federal level and with others to make a change there?
Well, I think we're going to start, my colleagues, my Republican colleagues, we have been talking about this, just they're strategizing right now about what legislation to move in the 25 sessions. So we will be back into long session in 2025. I think we keep in our lane, the state lane. It's always nice to coordinate with our Congress people and our senators, but by and large, we know that we have the timber in Oregon to meet this demand. We know we have the labor. I'm very concerned, as many are, about our mills closing. So I have not heard yet in the legislature us really just laying that out. What is that? What harvest is going to be required to produce that housing, and what number of mills do we have that capacity in our state? So we will be crafting that language to promote that concept that we need Oregon timber for our Oregon homes and our labor, our wood products labor.
What kind of obstacles do you think there will be to having that happen?
You know, it is still just completely baffling to me why the Democrats just don't want to harvest. Our forests are burning up. Over a million acres now is burning in the state of Oregon. And yet, and we know the root cause. We know that we have too much fuel. Overgrown forest, really mismanaged forests for a very long time. We have goals for sustainable harvest, and it is just baffling to me why we can't agree as a state that this is what we should be harvesting at sustainable levels.
Tied into that, to some degree, when you talk about lack of housing, sometimes that has led to people being homeless. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we had the recent court ruling regarding that. How do you see that shifting things?
Well, I do think that we need to there is a separation between affordable workforce housing and homelessness. So the homeless population, these are the chronic folks that are camping. This is a lifestyle. They, by and large, this population has a combination of mental illness and drug abuse, substance abuse. So that population, that is the one that is driving all kinds of costs in the state. And I can talk about healthcare, an example. I've been very involved with hospitals and their problem with these post-acute care patients and where they go. But what this court ruling has done now, it has given the communities more flexibility to kind of address their camping rules. Before, they were just hamstrung by, they were just risk adverse, afraid to make a move for fear of being sued. So now they can manage their public spaces for all people, so for the safety of all people. So we'll see how that plays out. I know communities large and small are having those conversations and battling with disagreements about that. But I do think it gives us flexibility and management tools that we didn't have before.
Another shift that we're going to see this fall is when the drug law changes in Oregon. That'll be September at some point in the month. Obviously, yeah, things are not going to all change overnight, though.
No, sadly. It took us a long while to get into this mess. You know, we've discussed, I've been on this committee, Measure 110. So we got 4,002 passed, which did allow police now that we've said we recriminalize drugs, that allows law enforcement to go in and to search and confiscate. Well, the problem is now they had an off-ramp of called a deflection program. That has yet to be really designed throughout the state to see how that's going to play out. But in some communities, I fear that's just kind of a revolving door. It's like, hey, would you like help? No, thanks. And back we go in this cycle of being arrested and going to deflection. We have stood up again, diversion and drug courts. And we have stronger penalties for drug dealing if those are enforced. So already we're reading articles, I'm sure you all are, all these fentanyl arrest, drug dealer arrests, and yet they're letting them out within 24, 48 hours. So that's not going to be helpful. But the big conversation, I think, moving forward is, yes, will we enforce? How is this going to play out, this continuum, and are we going to get people care, which is what we all want, because 80% of this population is not receiving any care. So we need to get them, have those, that capacity to build out our treatment programs. That will be a big point of conversation. I know we're all going to be watching because we've allocated a lot of money to this. So where has that money gone? Where does it need to go? Repurpose, reprioritize, look closely at how we're spending money in this state.
And the money going that direction has meant money has not gone into some other places.
Correct. So it went largely to allowing people to stay in their drug addiction, to just give them clean needles and try to just keep them as healthy as we could, keep them from overdosing. I'm not saying there's not a role for that in the whole process, but I think we didn't spend money in really building out the treatment programs. I know we've talked about our own local ADAPT and the recovery campus that Dr. Brigham is building out, and I think that might be a really great model for the state. Let's hope. We're going to have to continue to apply pressure there because there are still forces, particularly in the urban areas, that really do not are vehemently opposed to criminalizing drugs at any level.
And when the shift came, I mean, that was nationwide news almost immediately.
Yes. Well, because we were also, you know, an experiment nationwide, and it did not work well. And there are many, again, those forces saying, just give it time, give it time. We'll be Portugal. Many of legislators went to Portugal to look at that model. But it was very clear that the public had just had it. And it was public pressure that actually forced those stubborn legislators who did not want to come off at all what was currently existing. It was public pressure that forced them to move.
Do you feel like that even went into some of your Democratic colleagues who had maybe been quieter about it?
Yeah, they struggled in their own party. There was still a fraction of them that just under no circumstances were they going to agree to recriminalizing. But largely the party did, and it was because of that pressure and what has happened to beautiful Portland, Oregon. I'm sad to see that city that I used to enjoy a great deal become just a mess.
All right, we're going to take a break and inside Douglas County. More when we come back. State Representative Christine Goodwin. The interview podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1245 at News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Douglas County, 1247. Lars Larson coming at 1. Scott Beckstead will be here. We'll talk about a number of issues with him tomorrow regarding Bureau of Land Management, boroughs, and more on Inside Douglas County. And, of course, we'll be out at the Douglas County Fair part of next week as well. State Representative Christine Goodwin in here with us now, covering a lot of different topics. You mentioned during the break a piece of legislation coming out, possibly, or signatures being gathered for it right now you wanted to let people know about.
I do. I want to warn you. IP-17, which is going to become Measure 118, they have the signatures now to get it on the ballot. And they are a small group of millionaires out of California hoisting this monstrous tax on Oregon business. So basically, on top of all the other taxes that businesses pay, taxes on their profit, CAT tax, they're going to add another 3% on gross receipts, and this will be for businesses over $25 million. So some of you may go, oh, okay, they're big fat cats, don't worry about them. I warn you, this is a tax on all business, because for those businesses to survive, well, first of all, we have a real problem with out-migration of business in this state. If you can move, you're moving your business. I know I was just in Raleigh, North Carolina. That place is booming, right? They are welcoming headquarters. They are welcoming to business. Oregon is not welcoming at all. So if you can move, you are. But if you can and you can afford the tax, you're going to pass that along to all levels of business, all people who buy from you. And all of us that run a business know there's many, many layers in that. And of course, that affects the consumer. So anytime you add a tax to business, you have to see that as inflationary. That is adding tax. It is a hideous tax. OBI, Oregon Business and Industry, is fighting it. Good news, the governor just came out in opposition to it. So she's wise enough, it appears so far, to know that this is horrible for Oregon. But just be careful of these ballot measures. These ballot measures have gotten us in a lot of trouble. People just, you're not given true information about the consequences.
Along with business-related taxes, Oregon, sometimes there's been a struggle with death taxes.
Yes. So you are taxed. You only are allowed $1 million in assets. Well, with today's property values, which is, you know, one of the largest assets for folks, average incomes, folks, is their property. So it is really hard. The federal tax is $12 million. We've been trying to get our death tax, estate tax, up to $3 million, $5 million. Really, again, hurts mom-and-pop businesses. They can't pass along that business. They have to. It is really horrible for Oregon. We are still going to be fighting that. CAT taxes, again, just a gross receipts tax, also very hard on businesses and very inflationary.
A lot of things going on locally. Talk about the Riddle Activity Center, which is down there.
This is such a wonderful example of local folks coming together, seeing a need, and organizing. And what a great organizing their team. Lynn Herbert Lumber Company, was really initiated the project. This is for childcare, after-school activities, emergency facilities. So they're at phase one. They've raised $10 million, 75% of that locally. Roseburg Forest Products, an example, very big in contributing to that, 25% in grants. They are now they're getting their general contractor. They'll go to phase two. But I urge you to go to riddleroots.org for ability to donate to this, and to look at all of the details about the development of this project. This is really great for families, our working class families in Southern Douglas County.
Well, and a lot of the other communities, there's been talk of things like this, maybe at different sizes, depending on what works for a particular area, but having a lot of options there in that community, so it's not always a drive to Roseburg.
Correct. It really will scoop in. It is, you know, based out of Riddle, But it will encompass, I really think it will draw folks from all over Southern South County and, you know, very likely Roseburg as well. Similar kinds of things have been kind of proposed in Roseburg, but nothing has really taken off. Very impressed with this group. I've met with them several times. They are really on task.
We had a story on yesterday. You were involved with the Burdick Memorial. Talk about that one.
Yeah, so I had to press for, sponsor a House concurrent resolution to get a wayside memorial to Deputy Burdick. 25-year-old young officer took the call. There was a shooting at the Nutshell Tavern in Myrtle Creek. He races up from Glendale, sees the suspect coming out from underneath the bridge, stops his car, asks the suspect to stop. Suspect does not, pulls out a gun, shoots him through the chin, goes through his neck, lodges in his neck. He is now lying paralyzed and choking in his own blood. The guy comes up, shoots him in the stomach, steals his patrol car, and runs over his feet. He spent the next 40 years, and you can imagine, in chronic pain, but by all counts was a wonderful human being. So this was really his why. His widow came out from Kansas and his daughter. The county commissioners had been very helpful in this process. Took me two sessions to get this through as a resolution just so ODOT could place the sign. So it's now on the wayside. And we had such a great community turnout for that. It was really lovely. And Lieutenant Brad Odell was there and spoke, and it was really heartwarming.
Wow, those are tough situations, you know, for the long term, but to be able to remember them that way will be something that probably means a lot to that family.
Yeah, it sure did, and it meant a lot that I could assist and legislatively to get that to happen.
Now, we got through the spring primaries. We've got the November election. People are starting to talk about that. What do you see happening for Oregon?
Well, I think the first thing that Oregonians need to appreciate is that the presidential race pulls people out to vote, so we'll get a greater voter turnout. But it hasn't always really influenced our state races. I know we get very focused on the federal race. Of course, we've got a huge presidential race that's all on all of our minds, but we can't lose sight of our local state races and the congressional races. Oregon has not voted for a Republican president overall since Reagan, so we don't. And I don't think that's going to change. But there's a lot of I'm just encouraging everybody really pay attention to the candidates, go to the forums, go to locations, look at their qualifications, look at their records, and get out and vote. I mean, we have a real problem in Oregon. In the last election cycle for the primary, we had 34%, my district 30%. It's really not helpful to keep good legislators in Salem.
For the legislative calendar in the summer, what kinds of things are going on?
Well, legislators right now are either campaigning, it's the interim, they're still working on their projects. An example where I'm on two or three workforces and work groups, so we're still meeting virtually. There are a lot of those meetings are in Salem too, if you can make those. Those of us that live further away typically take our meetings virtually. But we are either campaigning, you know, or working in our communities, doing town hall meetings and just talking to people in preparation. We're meeting with agencies, everybody who may have an influence on our drafts. So we are putting together and discussing right now what draft concepts, meaning bills, that we are going to propose and possibly sponsor. Waiting to see what the Democrats, they still hold the majority of power in this state, so waiting to see what their big agenda is going to be.
Do you feel like there's any potential for Republican gains for the legislature?
I wish there were. I think we're struggling. I know the Republicans have three seats that we're just defending to stay at 25. We need to stay at 25. We can stop some tax bills, the most egregious tax bills, at 25 in the House. I don't think we're going to make much progress, though. I just don't want to lose ground. Perhaps there's one seat that we could pick up, but there are some really strong legislators who have tough general elections. I do want to put a plug in for Will Lathrop. He is running for Attorney General, Republican. Please look up his story. He has a fascinating story, a great history. Is just what this state needs as an Attorney General.
All right, out of time for now. State Representative Christine Goodwin, thanks for coming in.
You're so welcome.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.